Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I want to get one thing out of the way right off the very top. Let me get this out of the way right now. The New York Giants were not going to win that game last night. So do not come in here with your hilarious takes and your corny one-liners about how a black cat changed everything for them. Don't do that. Man, knock it off. Don't talk to me like that.
Don't talk to me, all right? Knock it off!
Be better than that, because I know the Giants are not better than that, and they were not going to win that game. And by the way, how terrible a look was that cat last night for the Giants? First of all, how is there a cat in your stadium? Much less, apparently, lots of them in your stadium. And secondly, how bad is it that the cat is the most exciting thing about your team right now? And if you've got no idea what I'm talking about because you didn't watch that game, you're about to find out. Because if an animal runs on the field, if the game has to be interrupted by a cat, who do you want to call the action of that cat? Well, the GOAT, of course. The GOAT, Kevin Harlan, on the cat. Roll it.
Oh, there's a cat. A black cat has taken the field. A black cat is running from the 20 to the near side, the 10. From the 39 in Dallas, here's a short throw down the middle, caught by Ingram. Caught at the 35, went to the 30. Now the cat running the other way. And so is Ingram at the 30 to the 25, to the 24-yard line of the Dallas Cowboys. It's a catch and run of 15. Now the cat is stopped at the 50.
So is it bad luck for the Giants? Is it bad luck for the Cowboys?
I don't know, but they've stopped playing. The players with hands on hips are watching the cat run and zigzag all over the field. The black cat is at the other end of the field.
He's Who brought walking. The cat?
He's walking to the 3. He's at the 2. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field. And the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown.
There is not a more versatile broadcaster in sports than Kevin Harlan. You know the sport. He'll call the game. He'll make it so much better. He even included that sponsored shout out during that call of the cat. That was Harlan's best work since that idiot ran onto the field in the Rams-Niners game a few years back.
Third and 4, looks into the nickel of San Francisco in the secondary. Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
Look
that
out.
Man.
Here comes the blue coat,
Oh,
Kevin.
They got him.
Here comes
They're coming
the blue
from the
coats.
Left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line. Oh, that was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
Kevin Harlan, as long as we're tipping the cap to media pros, how about my guy Ross Tucker, who was working the sidelines, showing some quick feet when the action came at him, and he took out the sound man. If you're wondering how I managed to get this far into a Cowboys-Giants game without talking about the Cowboys or the Giants, it's because that was not a good game. And I know the Giants were winning before the cat showed up, but nobody really thought the Giants were going to win that game. And sure, a win is a win, especially if it's on the road against a divisional rival in prime time. I guess, sort of. Just don't tell me we learned anything about the Cowboys last night, because we didn't. Because they weren't playing anybody who matters at all. And yet somehow they managed to come out and quickly fall behind. And then they kept trying to give that game away in the first half. But the Giants obviously did not want it, and they wouldn't take it. And then the black cat came on the field. And again, if there are any Giants fans listening who want to blame that game on that cat, you're a loser. Because it's not like the Cowboy players were fired up when they saw that cat. DeMarcus Lawrence said this.
First thing that crossed my mind, no joke, is like, they got bad luck now. It just turned on them, you know. So I was like, man. Game over. Like, if a black cat runs on the damn field on a Monday night football game, a black cat, like, you might as well call it quits, bro. Like, y'all luck is terrible. It's just bad luck, and I hate cats too, so it's hurry up and get this cat before it gets to me, you know? Yeah, man.
Just clowning. You know why? Because he knew that the Giants weren't going to win that game, black cat or not. He's quote, like, bleep, bleep, bleep. Hey, Dak, How about you, Dak? That game could not have started any worse for you, Dak. What did you think when you saw the cat?
I just was wondering who was going to catch the thing. I wasn't getting close to it.
Dak wanted no part of the cat. How about you, Ezekiel Elliott? Did you see cat?
Oh, no. I'm staying away from him. I'm allergic to cat, so I don't know. I wasn't feeling the black cat in the middle of the game.
Could these guys sound any more bored by the entire thing? We see cat, mate. Elk was probably watching that game screaming, "We see cat, mate. We see cat, mate." Look, what I'm saying is blaming it on the black cat would make it sound like the Giants actually had a good thing going before their luck changed. They didn't have a good thing going. And you know why that is? They're not a good team at all. And if you're going to blame the loss on the black cat, how do you explain them losing four in a row coming into that game when the cat was nowhere to be found? You can't, but I can. It's because the Giants are not good. Not on offense, not on defense. And Pat Shurmur and his crew better hit their knees every single night and give thanks for the New York Jets, because otherwise they'd be getting a lot more heat and attention than they are right now. That clown show that Crazy Eyes is presiding over is taking the glare off the Giants. But there's no getting around it. The Giants are 10-31 since the start of 2017. That is the worst record in the league during that time. Even worse than the Jets. And yet somehow, the Giants are seen as the competent organization. Somehow, when they're 0-6 this season, when Saquon Barkley plays the entire game, they're the competent organization. How the hell is that possible? Well, because of nights like last night. Dak Prescott throws an INT on the first play from scrimmage, and New York takes over at the Dallas 8. Wouldn't you think, with Saquon Barkley in the backfield, the Giants were a lock to start that game 7-0? Run this stud four straight times, cash in that gift that Dak gave them to start the night. But of course they didn't. Instead of punching it into the end zone, they had two runs, an incomplete pass, they settled for a 21-yard field goal. It's a bad thing. Well, it's a bad thing, except it's sort of a good thing, because that was their first lead in a game since week 4. It's November, and that field goal gave them their first lead in a game since September. That's how bad their offense is. And as bad as their offense is, it's not like the defense is much better. They went out and they make that deal for Leonard Williams from the Jets to shore up their rush defense. That didn't work. Ezekiel Elliott ran for 139 yards. And then absolutely kicked the Giants in the package with his post-game comment. Quote, "It was the easiest 140 yards I've ever gained. I don't even know if I broke a tackle. I just ran inside the scheme. Those guys just mauled them up front. Thank them for making it easier on me." End quote. He just said, "The easiest 140 yards I've ever gained. I don't even know if I broke a tackle." End quote. How's that taste, G-Men? Not only did he gash you, he couldn't wait to clown you when it was over. Like a man running over boys. It's a good thing that cat showed up. Otherwise, that would have been an all-time bore fest. Yes, the Cowboys had a nice moment or two, like Michael Gallup showing off his Ross Tucker-like footwork on this play.
Shotgun snap to Prescott. Line drive, throw to the near sideline. Belt high catch made on the sideline at the 7. Down the sideline and tumbling into the end zone. Touchdown, Michael Gallup. Got it. Belt high, crouching like a catcher in baseball. Then sprung and drove down the final 7 yards.
I guess what I'm saying is that was pretty good. But you know what would have made it better? If the Giants actually showed up. Hell, unless you like 4 field goals of 29 yards or less. If short field goals are your game, if you love offenses that can't do a damn thing in the red zone, then the Giants did the damn thing for you all night long. If you like short field goals and pointlessly challenging PI calls that the league is never going to overturn, then Pat Shurmur is your coach of the year. And if you like a quarterback who can't wait to give the ball away, then I've got your giveaway goat. May I introduce to you your hero, Giants fan, Daniel Jones.
Jones back to throw. The ball is knocked away as his arm was caught. The ball is loose. It's picked up on the side by Jordan Lewis. Grabs it at the 40. Down the sideline, 50. Chase to the 40. Down the sideline to 30. A foot race to the 20, the 10. Into the end zone. That is a Dallas touchdown on a fumble by the quarterback of the Giants.
Westwood One on the call. Another Daniel Jones fumble. My man is a turnover machine. He had three more last night. For the season, he has 8 picks and 8 fumbles. He's tied for the league lead in turnovers at 16. He's only started 7 games. What I'm saying is maybe the guy being fitted for a gold jacket after beating Tampa Bay might not be the second coming of Y.A. Tittle after all. I'm not saying he's terrible. But with the way the Giants fans and the New York media were reacting for that one game against the Bucks, you would have thought they had Patrick Mahomes, and they don't. What they have is 5 straight losses, no wins since September, and a quarterback with a total of 2 games where he threw more TDs than picks. And they've got the Jets on Sunday. What a freaking spitting match that's going to be. From the Adam Gase Bowl to the Failure Bowl, a couple of 1-7 teams. And Cowboy fan, yeah, I know, a win's a win, but that does not make you a Super Bowl contender. Far from it. Super Bowl contenders beat up on bad teams. They don't play down to their level for most of the game. Coach them up, Ginger. Do better, because what you're doing is not nearly good enough, and they are not Super Bowl contenders. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We are joined by PJ Fleck. As always, PJ, I have to ask you right off the very top, how are you doing today, PJ?
I'm doing elite, Tim. Thanks for having us on the show, man.
I knew it. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much. So you had a bye week, and now you've got Penn State coming up on Saturday. How would you describe the mood around the team and around the campus right now, PJ?
Well, our team's extremely focused. You know, we take one game at a time, and it's the biggest game of the year. Why? Because it's the next game. And that's the way our mindset's been all year. Find a way to be 1-0 in the Penn State. In high-pressure situations, high-pressure games, and it's a great learning experience for our players as they continue to prepare for that. But there isn't a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz around campus, which is tremendous. Hopefully, the largest crowd that TCF Bank Stadium's ever seen.
It's going to be a big Saturday night, Minnesota going up against Penn State. Now, you and I have talked about this in the past, but when you arrived at Minnesota, there was this belief that it's a really hard place to win and have success, yet you're 8-0 this year. You've got this massive game coming up on Saturday. How does it feel to be in the spot that you're in right now?
Well, we got a lot of work to do. You know, that's the biggest thing, is everybody on our staff and everybody on our team, as players and our administration, understand how far we have to go. But this is built for the long haul. You know, this is, when we got here, we wanted to rebuild our culture and build it into somehow, some way to become a champion again. You know, we're one of the most historical football programs in all of college football, with 7 national titles, 18 Big Ten championships. We just haven't done it for over 50 plus years. So we've talked about restoring that tradition and being that bridge from the past to the present, and then obviously into the future. But we're right on track of where we're supposed to be. We feel that way, and we're doing a great job recruiting, which is tremendous, and Minnesota is a wonderful place to be.
We're talking Minnesota football, Minnesota and Penn State coming up on Saturday. PJ Fleck is my guest. You know, as part of that culture, it's got to start with your quarterback, Tanner Morgan. He's somebody you identified a while back, is really gritty, really tough, really smart quarterback who could help turn around a program. What did you see in him that made you feel and say that?
Well, he's got incredibly high intangibles. I mean, his intangibles are off the charts. You know, if he walked into the room, one, he looks just like me. And two, he's not the biggest, strongest, or fastest guy. He didn't light it up with the amount of stars that he was with recruiting. But what he does is he's got an incredible winner's mentality. He's incredibly smart. He makes great decisions. He's very accurate. And he's one of the best leaders you'll ever want to be around. I mean, this young man's going to be successful way beyond football into his career when his football career is done. But he's got so much to do while he's here. He's a wonderful person, and he makes our team better, and he's infectious. And I think when you have infectious people around that do all the right things and your hardest workers are your best players, you got something really special.
We're talking to PJ Fleck. In other words, there's something to be said about knowing how to win, finding a way to win. Is that something that you can teach, or is that something maybe that cannot be taught?
Well, I think it can be taught a little bit, right? But I think the biggest thing is we do everything we can to recruit winners who have turned programs around that is our fit. You know, we're not for everybody. I'm not for everybody, nor do I want to be for everybody, right? But our culture, our Row the Boat culture, is about serving and giving. It's about other people. It's about making your life bigger than yourself. So we try to find those same type of people. And a lot of times they come from people who started as freshmen, started as sophomores in high school, maybe their high school only won 1, 2, 3 games like Tanner and Morgan's did. And then by the time they left, they're winning 13 games. They're winning 12 games. They were able to see the whole process through. And they were part of the failing. They were part of the success. And they understand that the dream is the journey. And the enjoyment is in the journey. Even when you're failing, you're growing. So those are the people we really look for that have a crack on their shoulder, want to prove something to themselves, that they are exactly who they say they are. And it's really just special people. And one thing we've always had, whether it's Western Michigan or Minnesota, we got really special people. And if you get enough special people together collectively, rowing the boat in the same direction, you got a chance to be really, really successful.
We're talking to PJ Fleck. I've got another one for you, another special person. I had Casey O'Brien on the show last week. I could not have been more impressed or more inspired by him. What do you remember about the first time you met him?
Well, the first time I remember meeting him, really cancer wasn't the topic. It was one of my first days on the job. He walks in my office, and usually at this point, you know, new coach, a lot of people are coming to my office to leave, right? Because they've been there, they don't want to go through a coaching change, so they're out of there. He walks in and says, "Coach, I'm not really on the team, but I'd love to be on the team." And I'm like, "Listen, I don't care what position you play, I don't care how big you are, I'm taking you." And then we had the conversation about his life, his whole story, and he's just such a fighter. I mean, to defeat cancer 4 times as a young person, and not only play college football, but play in the Big Ten. And to be able to do that when people said you won't, you couldn't, you shouldn't, and we won't let you, that just shows the power of people and the power of his fight. And he's such a determined young man. He's so courageous, and he's one of the leaders on our football team.
We're talking to PJ Fleck. After he got into his first game as a Minnesota player, he was coming off the field. PJ, on our TV simulcast, I just played the video. The two of you had a long embrace. It was a very emotional moment. What kind of feelings were you having at that time?
Well, very emotional feelings. You know, it's very difficult and it's very hard to really be a human during a football game, right? Coaches are coaches during football games, and you almost lose a little bit of your humanity as a game goes on. And that was the most emotional I've ever been during a football game. And it was the most human I've ever been during a football game. And it was almost an out-of-body experience because it was so emotional. You couldn't hold back. He's such a special young man. And you immediately think about, that's your son. Because they are. We have 125 sons. Heather and I have 125 plus 4 children of our own. And when you're hugging that young man, you don't want to let him go. Because you think of your own sons and your own daughters, of if that happened to them. You'd want them to be just like Casey with the fight that he has. And he's just such a special young man. He's just been such an inspiration to our whole state and now hopefully the entire country.
He is amazing. He really is amazing. PJ Fleck is joining us. PJ, you mentioned culture a few moments ago. There's a story from earlier this year. The night before facing Nebraska, you spoke to the players and you asked them, is it worth it? What was the thinking behind that conversation with them, and what did you want from them to take away from that?
Well, it goes along. People say, what is the hardest thing about taking a job at the University of Minnesota? And I said, just like what you said, right? Changing people's thoughts, perceptions, ideas, the way they think about Minnesota football, what it can be. And so when I kind of went around the room, I just asked, I told them a little story about every one of the players. And then I also asked them, is it worth it? Like Carter Coughlin is a tremendous football player here, one of our best seniors. He picked Minnesota to see Minnesota be undefeated one day. And he's from the state of Minnesota. And I asked him, is it worth it? Is it all the hard things that you went through, all the difficult times, all the adversity, the coaching changes? Has it been worth it? Ty Johnson came back, our wide receiver, for his senior year instead of going to the NFL. And I asked him, is it worth it? I want it to be worth it to play at the University of Minnesota. I want our culture to be worth it in your life. I just want everything you do to be worth it. And that doesn't mean you're always going to have success. But that's the whole point of the dream is the journey. That's the excitement, the fun, the passion, the failing. The adversity within the journey is also have to be embraced. So that was what I was getting at. Is it worth it? Up until this point, has it been worth it? And every single one of them answered yes. And we just love that when our players, you know, talk so highly of the University of Minnesota and love our culture. And I want them to love our culture and love coming to practice every day and going to school and loving that. I mean, we have 85 players with a 3.0 GPA. That's unheard of. And we're very excited about our future, and we're very excited about the young people we have on the football team.
And I know you're pumped up for the opportunity you have this weekend. Minnesota's 8-0. They're taking on Penn State, big game on Saturday night. So when you face Penn State, that means facing James Franklin, a guy that I know you have a relationship with and a ton of respect for. How far back do you go with him, and what do you like about the way he approaches his business?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think he's just one of the best human beings in our profession. He's very professional. He does everything the right way. He's incredibly classy. He's got a lot of energy. He's all about culture, and he's a tremendous football coach, and he cares about people. And I think that's getting harder and harder to find, to be honest with you. And he's, we go back to the Vanderbilt days. When I got my job at Western Michigan University, I looked for young head coaches that were in really tough jobs. And I sought him out and asked if I could come see him. And I went to a few different places. And James Franklin, there's one thing about going to visit somebody. It's another thing about having a guy sit down for days, multiple days, and spend every moment with you and sharing things with you and pouring into you. And that's what he did to me. And I owe a lot to him. He's a tremendous teacher, a wonderful football coach, and a really good friend.
PJ Fleck joining me for a few more moments. So when you look at his team, when you look at Penn State as a football team, what is the thing that concerns you the most?
Everything. I mean, it's really hard not to say that because it's everything. Their D-line, they rotate 7-8 guys in. They can all stop the run, and they can all rush the passer. I mean, they get on your quarterback instantly. They're a smothering defense up front. They're linebackers. Linebacker you. I mean, it's exactly what they are. They're long. They're fast. They're athletic. They're tough. They're smart. And their secondary keeps everything in front of them. I mean, offensively, I mean, everybody knows about KJ, and everybody knows about Clifford. Their offensive line's big and athletic. The tight ends are a huge part of their system, and they've got really world-class sprinters at the wide receiver position. And special teams, they're really sound. So, they come at you from every angle, and they are a very, very explosive football team, tough football team, and they know how to win. Most games in college football are lost. They're not won. And it's really who loses it less that wins. James Franklin's teams win games, and that's what he's really built his MO on.
PJ Fleck joining us. One last thought. I know that you're not going to go into the bye week and just relax. In fact, you took in a Golden Gophers hockey practice. You threw on the pads. You got between the pipes. PJ, what was that like? Was that an elite performance?
Well, the performance wasn't elite because I only stopped the pucks that hit me. I would say it was an elite experience. I would say that because Bob Moskow, who's one of the best college hockey coaches, is our head hockey coach. We have an unbelievable hockey team, unbelievable hockey tradition here at the University of Minnesota. I'm a huge hockey fan. And when you coach football in the state of Minnesota, you better say that you're a hockey fan, that's for sure. I think that was part of even my interview questions. But when you start talking about our hockey team, they're young. They're like what we were last year. We were the youngest team in America last year. They got tons of talent, just young. And our hockey team's going to be really good. But we talk about having this one Minnesota, our whole athletic department connected, all on the same page. And the head coaches have to be the leaders of that, not only just the student-athletes, but the coaches. And I love to get around to our other sports and support our sports. And our college basketball season starts tonight with Coach Pitino.
Minnesota is 8-0, the number 13 in both polls, and they've got number 5 Penn State coming in Saturday at noon Eastern. P.J. Fleck is their head coach. P.J., so good to have you back. You know, I appreciate the relationship, and it's always good to have you on this show. Good luck this weekend. I know it's a huge one.
Jim, really appreciate it. Thanks for always having us on the show and being so good to us. Row the boat, Scotty Mark, go Gophers.
Jahlil Adai is my guest. Jahlil, good to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, dude. Good. It's good to have you. So, lot to cover. Let me talk about the win over Jacksonville in London. You had an INT. I want to get to that pick in a second. But overall, any flight is a good flight after a win. But how much better is that flight when you're coming back from Europe with a W?
Oh, man, it's the best thing. You know, even when you're in the States and you get a win on the road, it's always a good time to mingle and, you know, get that bond time with your teammates. So when you come back from Europe and experience in London how we did and getting a victory the way we did, man, that was awesome.
You know, I'm eager to talk to you about the experience you had there, but take me through the pick first. What did you see on that interception, and how good did it feel to come down with that ball and then chase it with the chopper celebration?
it felt good, man. I was in the middle of the field with man free. There was speed at three. There was a fast receiver at three, and he ran a deep over. And I kind of just followed Mitchell's eyes, and he brought me to it. And I was originally going for the hit. And last second, I seen that the ball sailed, and I went up and grabbed it. And I was in London on foreign soil, so I had to hit him with the chopper style.
I like it. Jahlil Adai joining us. That's great. Now, the interception was the first of four straight drives that the defense ended with turnovers to end that game. I understand that it's a next man up league, but you guys were playing without J.J. Watt. How proud were you then of the defensive performance and the statement that you guys made as a group overall?
Right. You know, losing J.J. is very, very big. But, you know, guys stepped up and the guys are playing team ball, communicating, playing fast, playing physical. And the way we played yesterday was good. You know, never perfect. You always have things to learn from and look at and get better from. But I think that we played complimentary ball yesterday as a team, especially as a defense.
Julio, I've made that trip to London a couple of times. I mean, like, that's a tough enough trip just to get on an airplane and go over there and just kind of walk around and sightsee. That's your second trip. So what's the experience like, both from a physical standpoint in terms of jet lag and getting acclimated, but also in terms of playing in a foreign country and in front of fans who normally don't get to see you?
Right. It could be a little tough on the body. You know, you're coming from Houston. We were 5 hours, I think, ahead, you know, so obviously, our entire sleeping clocks were off, but coach and, you know, the organization did a great job of getting us in, you know, getting work still, giving us a lot of time to rest, catch up on sleep, hydrate, and take care of our bodies. But it was an awesome experience, you know, getting to see the city a little bit and then getting to play against such passionate fans. You know, they're the number one supporter of soccer and they're passionate about it. And to be able to play in Wembley Stadium, and I'm a soccer fan myself with so much history and tradition that goes on out there. It was electrifying. I think it was 85,000 strong, and it was rocking.
Jahlil Adai joining us. I was going to ask you that, like, what's the energy like? How electric is it? But you kind of laid that out. So also, it's another game where Deshaun Watson did something pretty much that nobody has ever seen before. As somebody who's been around the game your entire life, what do you think when you watch him play?
It's crazy because I've been around Hall of Fame quarterbacks such as Phil, and I come to this, so I'm spoiled, you know? But it's just a testament to the kind of player he is, the work he puts in, and obviously just the ability that he has. Every time he does something, it's stuff that you've never seen, and you're just on the sideline like, wow, I can't believe I witnessed that. But I'm glad he's on my team.
So as I was going to say, as a member of the defense, how valuable is it knowing that you've got a quarterback who can do something special every time you get him the ball? So if you guys get him the ball, he and the rest of the offense are going to take advantage of it, and you pretty much know they're going to. What's that like?
It's a great feeling, just knowing that you have a quarterback that's always going to give you a chance, you know, no matter what the situation in the game, up, down, tied. We know when we get the ball to D4, he's going to give us an opportunity to come out with a W.
You know, when I asked you about that pick, you said initially you were going to go for the hit, and then you made that play. One of the hallmarks of your game is your tackling form. And then after the win over Atlanta, a game in which you had 10 tackles, you said, quote, early in my career, I used to want to hit a lot. Now I want to tackle, so it's different. Mm-hmm. Get him down, end quote. When did you make that switch, and how different is your approach on the field now as a result?
I think it was around my fourth year. When I was young, I just wanted to hit everybody hard, and that's just part of me. That's my game. That's what I like to do. I like to impose my will. I'm a hard hitter. But I had to learn that every hit doesn't need to be a hit. It could be a tackle, get them down, just grab a body part, come up with the tackle. You know, so I think I learned it as, you know, I got over like my third, fourth year, kind of those young years, and just know that I got to stay healthy to be out here and contribute, help my team win. So that's when the ties kind of changed, and I think I've been doing a good job of it. Always can improve, but I'm going to continue to do that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So is any of that a part of or a result of the rule changes in the game and the way the game is now officiated?
You definitely got to know what the rules are now because it's different. You know, coming in this league 7 years ago, it's different when a guy is coming across the middle. You just used to be able to tee off on him, but you can't do that no more. Every hit, it really has to be calculated. You know, you got to lower your target. You got to wrap up. You can't leave with your helmet. And I think no doubt about it, that rule has force guys to change their tackling style and wrap up more than just delivering the big blow.
Jahlil Adai joining us. All right, so bottom line, what is the secret then to good open field tackling in your mind?
I think it's picking the inside hip of the runner, closing grass, gaining up the most amount of grass as you can, taking the air out of the distance between you two, instead of bringing your hips and grabbing a body part. I always tell myself I grab a body part, whether it's an ankle, shoelace, the tongue of the shoe, the wristband. As long as I get them down, it's a good tackle. So that's one thing that I keep in my mind.
All right, see, the thing is now, I mean, everybody loves your versatility that you bring to the game in terms of being a safety, a linebacker, a wild card. You played four different positions with the Chargers. So what does it take to be in that role as a guy who can do literally everything on the field?
I'm blessed. I'm honestly blessed, but it just I pride myself on being able to do a lot. I pride myself on leading. I pride myself on watching a lot of film. You know, and whatever I'm asked of by my coaches and the organization, I put 110% effort into it, and I pray that it turns out the right way.
All right, so what about your approach in terms of being a leader? You strike me as somebody who's also looking to lead. So when you come into a new locker room like you have with the Texans, how did you approach being a leader?
Just initially going about my business, being a professional, on and off the field, the way I worked in the weight room, the way I competed in practice, you know, getting to know guys, getting to know their families. Because you got to really know somebody before you can actually go to war with them. And I think that's the biggest thing, getting to know those guys, you know, and just working. And I think if you work, it does a lot more speaking than just vocally.
All right, so you and I spoke when you were with the Chargers, and then the offseason you signed with the Texans. What did you like most about that opportunity? Why did you think that would be a good fit for you?
Number one, they win a lot. It's a good organization. Every time you look up during the playoffs, winning a division, they offered me a job to be able to come in, like you said, and do a lot of different things for them on the defense. And it's the city of Houston where they love sports. You know, it's a big, big sports town. State of Texas is a big football city, and I just thought that this would be an awesome place to come play.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the state of Texas, because your football background is really interesting in the sense that you played your high school football in Florida. Now you're playing pro football in Texas. There's always that ongoing debate about where high school football is better or bigger, right? Florida or Texas. So what was it like when you were playing high school ball at Riverview?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was crazy. The city shut down. You know, Florida is big, big, big for football. I always tell people it's Florida, Texas, California in that order. But it was big. It was big. You know, growing up in Florida, that's the culture. That's what you do when you, as a kid, you want to go outside, you want to play football, you want to make it to the NFL, and buy your mom and dad a house one day and be able to support your family doing what you love. And just being where I am today, I think it's a testament of my parents raising me, good morals and values, and staying prayed up.
So, Jaleel, there's a great story from back in the day that when you were 7, you were telling your mom that you would play in the NFL one day. The vast majority of people, of course, who play football never make it to the NFL, much less make it 7 years in the league. So what's it like to live the dream? Does it feel the way you thought it would?
It feels everything and more, man. Every day I'm thankful, I'm blessed. And I just thank God for the opportunity to let me, you know, see my dream through. And it's true. I told my mom around the age of 7 or 8 that I would make it on the big screen TV one day and make my family proud. And that's one of my motivations each and every day, is that I get to put a smile on my family members' faces who know me, who love me, who pray for me, and who are in my corner. So it's a good thing.
So what about your family now? Before I let you go, your son Zion was born in April 2018. What's the first year and a half of fatherhood been like for you?
Oh, it's been awesome, man. I love my guy, Zion Kweku Adai. Kweku is my middle name. It's an African middle name from Ghana. I mean, he's born on a Wednesday. We both were born on a Wednesday, so I gave it to him. And it's been a blessing. You know, my wife, Lindsay Adai, she does an awesome job with him while I'm at work and raising him. He's just been nothing but a joy, the biggest motivation that I could ever have, and I'm thankful for him.
Dude, it's going to get so much better, too. Just wait.
Yes, sir.
All right, so finally you got some time off, but then you've got Baltimore next weekend. You faced Lamar Jackson in the postseason last year. When you're getting ready to go up against him, what's the biggest key in your mind?
You just got to know he's going to make his plays. You know, he's that kind of player. He's electrifying. But you got to continue the ball, and you got to just bend but don't break. It's that kind of philosophy you got to go against. You got to go into that week thinking, you know, you got to try to, you know, have discipline, rush lanes, you know, bring pressure on them up the gut and make your guys on the edge rush to the level of them. So it's going to be a tough task for us. Obviously, they're running the ball well. He's throwing the ball well. All three phases are beasting on special teams and defense, so it'll be a good challenge for us coming in to Baltimore next week.
Exactly the breakdown that I expected from you. Jaleel Adai joining us. Houston's in first in the AFC South. He's having a big year with them and a really big game in that win over Jacksonville. You've got Houston at Baltimore November 17th. That, of course, is a CBS game. Jaleel, great to have you back. I appreciate you, and so good to get caught up. Thanks for doing that.
I appreciate you. Thank you, Jim.
Today I want to announce that Dwight Howard is my Jim Rome player of the week. No, actually, he's the Jim Rome player of the season. No, wait, Dwight Howard is my Jim Rome man of the year. Yeah, I said it. Because that's how the NBA has been this year. It's been upside down. Everything about the NBA has been upside down this year. Like the Suns. The Suns beat the Sixers last night in a game that people actually had an interest in. People were actually looking forward to that game. The Suns and the Sixers, and the Suns won. That's how crazy the association's been. In other words, every preconceived notion you had coming into the season is out of the window already. But I'll take credit when it comes to Dwight, because when it comes to this guy, I was rolling out that welcome wagon before the event or before he even arrived. Back when it was a mere possibility that they might sign him, I was all about that because I wanted that second act. I wanted redemption. I wanted Smash Mouth covers. I wanted legendary quotes. I wanted it to be Halloween every single day with the big fella stashing and smashing copious amounts of candy. I wanted all of that because I knew it would be good. I knew if he came back here, it would be good. But I would be lying to you if I said that I knew it would be this good. The Lakers would be lying to you if they said they knew it would be this good. Dwight would be lying to you if he said that he knew it would be this good. Because nobody knew. Nobody knew it would be like this. Because Dwight has been an absolute force since his arrival. I mean, a straight-up stud. And LeBron and AD are benefiting immensely. Hell, the entire city is benefiting immensely. The Lakers have won 5 straight since they opened up the year by losing to the Clippers. They're on top in the Pacific. They're playing some of the best defense in the NBA. No, actually, they are the best defensive team right now in the NBA. And a big chunk of that, the credit, goes to Dwight Howard. And I'm not just talking about that monster game Sunday against San Antonio, where he went for 14 points, 13 rebounds, and 2 block shots in only 21 minutes. And that's not a one-off. This guy's doing stuff like that every single night. Crazy stuff. Stuff like throwing lobs to fellow big AD.
Aldridge, averaging 18.2. Lob under to Davis! One hand emphatically throwing it down on the assist from Dwight.
Dwight Howard wearing a medium Lakers jersey with Larry Zonka's number, throwing lobs to Anthony Davis while their teammate LeBron James is on the bench. I mean, what a damn time to be alive. If I tried to conjure up this vision a few years back and I tried to sell this to you, that probably would be a reason to go. You could add that to our list of universal reasons to go. Somebody spits in your face, you go. Somebody insults your face, or I should say your race or your religion, or somebody insults your significant other, you go. Rome says Dwight Howard is killing it and is a big reason why the Lakers are once again a legitimate title threat, is a reason to go. Not only would that be a reason to go, that probably would go right to the top of the list. Or it would have been if I said that a few years back. But right now, it's legit. It's true. The Lakers are legitimate title contenders. And at 33, Dwight Howard is one of the biggest reasons why they are. Hell, remember before the season when everybody was saying you can't win a championship with just a big two of LeBron and AD? Like, those two aren't enough. You can't win a championship with just two guys, two alphas. Yeah, well, they don't have two. They've got three. It's a big three. Put Dwight in there with those other two big dogs. I mean, this whole thing is mind-blowing. The fact that he's even back with the Lakers after that disastrous first stint here in LA is incredible. Seeing him dominate and the fans loving him is like the impossible dream. And the most impossible thing of all is that this dude, Dwight Howard, of all guys, Dwight Howard is so self-aware. The guy who I would have said can't even tell time knows exactly what time it is and exactly who he is and who and what he's not. That's the biggest shock of all to me. Not even that physically he still has something to bring to it, but like that he's figured it out. So many alphas on the back end of their careers cannot cope with no longer being who they once were. They never figure it out. They can't. Carmelo Anthony is a perfect example of that. He didn't figure it out. He can't figure it out. That's why he's not in the NBA right now. I mean, he could help somebody, but he can't figure it out. Allen Iverson, same way. I remember at the end of his career, I would come on the show and say, AI, man, look, I understand that you were the guy. Like, you were the guy. Come off the bench, man. Accept the role. Be a sixth man. You can still help. You can still be really effective. Wouldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Could not figure it out. Either AI or Melo or both could have prolonged their careers, could have helped out a team or teams, and would have gotten a hell of a lot of respect for it too. But they couldn't help themselves. They couldn't self-scout. They weren't self-aware enough. Too much pride. Too much ego. They could not, like a lot of great athletes, could not accept what they had become. Couldn't accept that they were no longer what they were. Couldn't accept that they could still be effective without dominating. Couldn't accept a role coming off the bench, even though they could have been effective doing it. Those two didn't figure it out. And I would have bet anything I had that Dwight Howard would be the third guy in that group. That there was no way that guy could figure it out. But he has. I would have been wrong. This dude seems to know exactly who he is. And unlike Melo or AI, he's been able to accept a different role. And now he's killing it because he has. Again, the Lakers are one of the best stories in the NBA so far because Dwight is the best story in the NBA so far. This guy's getting love from everybody. Even the guy that he used to smash heads with, his former coach, Stan Van Gundy, was hyping him up on Sirius.
He helps his teammates. He'll certainly help them defensively and on the boards. And I think that's all he's trying to do right now.
He does help his teammates. And he certainly is helping them on the boards. And that is all he's trying to do right now. Man, it's amazing. And he's doing it so well. Like Dwight, when you watch him, he's no longer looking to slow down the offense with post-ups or trying to play with his back to the basket. He doesn't want the offense to run through him. Man, this guy's just getting his points off dunks. Dwight Howard is a glue guy. Dwight Howard's an energy guy. Wait for this. Dwight Howard is a character guy, a team guy, an unselfish guy, an amazing guy. He's a freaking basketball savant. He's a basketball genius. And why do I say that? Not just because of what he's doing on the floor, but because of things that he's saying off of it, like this. Don't say that this guy is simply accepting his role. He's way more than that. This is way more than that. It's way more than just a role for Superman. And I quote, I don't see it as a role. I see it as my purpose. I think it's my purpose to go out every single night and play hard defense, trying to block every shot, trying to be in the paint, get a lot of steals, go for loose balls. Whatever I can do for this team, be of service. That's my mission. I don't see it as my role. I see it as a purpose, end quote. Holy crap. Mind blown again. Dwight Howard has cracked the code. Dwight Howard, of all people, has figured out one of the secrets to living a meaningful life. The one thing we're all looking to do. Dwight knows his why. Like, why are you here? What is your purpose? Do you even have one? Do you even know what it is? Dwight does. Dwight is here to dominate on defense. Dwight's purpose is to block shots, clean up the boards, do all the dirty work that nobody wants to do, and be the best and most unselfish teammate he can possibly be. Big fella knows his why. Why? Because I want to make Bronny better. This guy's amazing. Man, give this dude some bleeping credit. For real. I could not be more impressed.
Credit. I mean, for real.
I'll tell you what else you want to give him credit for. He's their third best player. For real. And thanks to him, AD, no matter what he says about Chicago, off the cuff, AD does not have to spend so much time at the five, something we know he hates. So I knew Dwight would be good. I was here for it. I had no idea he'd be this good. And now I'm not sure how long this keeps up. I mean, if he stays healthy and he remains committed to his purpose, his reinvention, maybe at 33, this is who this guy is. Maybe it proves that dudes like this really can change and evolve. And just as importantly, maybe this proves the Lakers are a legitimate threat, and maybe this town does not belong to the Clippers. Can I get a hell yeah for Dwight Howard?
Hell yeah!
The King is back. The King is back, and I do not mean LeBron. Dwight Howard. Damn, Dwight. Couldn't be more impressed. Cole Beasley joins us. Cole, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So with the win, you guys are 6-2 now. I know you and everybody else in that locker room would probably say that you have not played your best football yet this year. So how good does it feel to start 6-2 and knowing that your best football is still ahead of you?
It feels great, man. And, you know, going to a new team, you never know what it's going to be like, but I couldn't have asked for any better situation. I love the guys on this team, and you know, they come to work every day, and it's really fun to be a part of, and a unique experience here in Buffalo. And I'm just excited to keep building this team and getting better and better with these guys.
Cole Beasley joining us. Cole, I've talked to a lot of Bills over the years. I've been there. I've seen it firsthand. I want to get into that unique experience in a minute, but I want to talk about your quarterback, Josh Allen. It seems like from the very moment you got there, you've been hyping him both as a player and a leader. What is it that you've seen from him that gives you that feeling? Is it his physical ability, or is it more about the mental side and remaining steady?
It's both. You know, everybody knows he has the physical tools, but what makes a great quarterback is how they deal with things mentally, the ups and downs of the game. And, you know, he does a good job of staying level-headed throughout everything. You know, whether a bad play or good play, he remains the same guy. He just moves on to the next play and keeps moving forward. And that's what you want to see out of a quarterback and your leader. So, you know, I've loved playing with him so far. And I can't wait to keep building this chemistry together and get better and better. Sky's the limit for him, man. He's so athletic. He can chuck it anywhere on the field. So I'm excited for him. He's got a bright future.
Bills wide receiver Cole Beasley joining us. Cole, as long as we're talking about mindset, what kind of a mentality does it take to have success in the NFL from the slot? Because you know there's going to be hits that are going to come your way.
You know, I actually do a good job of avoiding those hits. So that's why I've been able to play for as long as I have so far. But really, it's just kind of, I don't know, I got a good understanding for coverages at a young age. I played quarterback in high school with my dad was my coach. So I got to develop an understanding of coverages early. And then also, when I went to SMU, I played for June Jones. So and a lot of it, we had to read coverages, so that helped me as well. And it's just knowing where people are going to be at, how coverages work. So I'll look at a coverage, and I want to understand what coverage it is, whether I have an option route or not, so I know where guys are going to be coming from after the catch as well. So that really helps me to avoid those hits.
I think that's really interesting. And I think a lot of people know that you played quarterback in high school, but maybe as importantly was the fact that you played point guard in basketball, and you were a very good one at that. How much does that help you in that regard, too, in playing the position in the NFL?
I think that's really made me the route runner that I am. The way I release against press corners, I'm basically playing one-on-one basketball with them. You know, some guys stem and do other things, but I like to square everybody up and you know, not really give them a tale of which way I can go. I square them up so I can go either way. And, you know, that's really what you do in basketball. So, you know, a lot of how I run routes came from playing a lot of basketball. I really don't think I'd be the route runner I am today if it weren't for all the basketball I played. And I played a lot of AAU in the off season too. And actually my head coach of basketball was Tony Hill, who used to play for the Cowboys. So, you know, he may have helped me a little bit pass some wide receiver tools down and through basketball.
Cool. Tony the Thrill Hill.
Yes, sir.
I've talked to Buffalo Bills players for the years, and you started the conversation, actually, Cole, by saying what a unique experience this has been so far. When I talk to Bills players, it keeps coming up over and over again, the relationship between the players and the fans. You played in Dallas. That's another really passionate fan base. So what's your impression of the Bills Mafia so far?
And from my understanding, they've been through a lot. For a lot of years, so just the passion that they have and standing behind their team is incredible. And actually, my last two touchdowns, I've gotten to jump in the stands and party with them a little bit, and you know, it's been a blast. So you know, I've seen some fans with painted faces and wearing all kinds of crazy stuff, and actually got beer all over me when I jumped in the stands. So we had a good party on Sunday. It was awesome.
There's no party like a Bills party, and on our simulcast, we just rolled some videotape of you going in the stands. It looked amazing. You know, one more thing that comes up from the guys who played in other cities, you know, like they have this impression of Buffalo is a place to live that maybe is not so favorable, and then they join the team, and then they spend time in Buffalo, and they end up really liking it. What's it been like for you so far to be in that city, to live and work in the city?
Yeah, that's why I said it. Really, it's a unique experience because, you know, with it not being a huge city, there's not really a lot of things to do maybe in the city life. So, you know, there's a lot of my teammates still have parties. There's always something going on with your teammates, and you're always together. That's one thing that's different about Buffalo than Dallas. Dallas is so big, and everybody kind of spreads out and goes their own ways once practice ends or once we're done with work. But here, man, we're always together. My kids have so many friends with their teammates' kids, so that's why it's such a unique deal. We're always together, and we really build that bond, and it makes it a lot easier to play for the man next to you on Sundays.
I was going
to
say, Cole, how does that translate? I think for people who don't do it, we have a hard time understanding chemistry. It always seems to me that people who say chemistry doesn't matter are the ones who don't have it. How does that translate on that field, that bond you're talking about that you build off the field?
Oh, no, it's important. The more you care about the guy you're playing with, the more length you'll go to do your best for him. You don't want to let those guys down, you know. I mean, if you don't know your teammates, then it's like you don't really care as much about letting a guy down or not. You know what I mean? It's more about you than it is them. But here it's not that way. You know, every guy's playing for the guy next to him, and we care about everybody because we're always together. And you know, really we build that chemistry and that love for each other because of that, you know, for that reason. And, you know, really they have, you know, McDermott does a good job of making it a point to bring family around to the facility. And, you know, there's always like events and stuff. My kids went trick-or-treating there for Halloween. So they had this big deal for that. That was the first time I've ever done anything for Halloween. Usually teams have Christmas parties and stuff, but they go all out for every event, man. So it's a real cool deal.
That is cool. Cole Beasley, my guest. You're working with Polaris Ranger and the Most Driven Team program. Go ahead, lay that out for me, Cole. What's that all about?
Yeah, I've really gotten together with him. You know, I played Texas high school football, so I know how awesome it is. So some of the most fun I've ever had playing football. You know, there's really not a day that goes by that I don't think about one moment from like a high school football game. So it's pretty cool. But really I'm partnering with them and Dave Campbell's Texas football to identify five schools that are playing for more than wins and losses. And, you know, all their stories have been captured in short videos as part of Polaris' Most Driven Team campaign. And anyone can go watch these stories and vote for who they think is the most driven team on there. And it's texasfootball.com. So, you know, it's really exciting for those guys. They have something else to play for. Not that they really need any motivation playing in Texas. So, you know, there's nothing bigger than that.
It's funny to say that. We were just talking to Jaleel Adai of the Texans, and we were talking about Texas football versus Florida football. I myself am a California guy. Cole Beasley appearing courtesy of Polaris Ranger and the Most Driven Team program. And Buffalo is 6-2. They're second in the AFC East. Cole, really good to have you on the show. Thanks for your thoughts. Hope we can do it again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Dana Point rules here in SoCal. So let's go there right now. Dana Point, Trapper. Yo, Trapper, what's up?
Good to be back, Jimmy. Trams like us, Dave. Seems like just yesterday, Jimmy, you were working the long shift in San Diego, and the cons were just a bunch of drunks by the side of the road. Now, 30 years later, you're going into the Hall of Fame, babe. Congratulations to you, brother. Jimmy, my beef is with inferior jerky. That's why I've made my own, and I call it Old Trapper Beef Jerky. Old Trapper ain't your parents' jerky, Jimmy. It's the choicest cut of sliced steak mixed with the finest seasoning. It's ultra premium, babe. I made a commercial, Jimmy, using Jeff in Southfield. Here's a clip.
Clones, Old Trapper Beef Jerky is the Dom Perignon of jerky. But it's more than that. It's the Rolls Royce of salted meat. I'm serious when I tell you, clones, that Old Trapper Beef Jerky is like Javier's in a bag. Except it's so good, it shouldn't be served in a bag. It should be served in a Fabergé egg. That's Old Trapper Ultra Premium Beef Jerky.
Truer words have never been spoken, Jimmy. Another great thing about Old Trapper is it won't cost you 30 pieces of silver, babe. You can have it for as little as an Ira Craig royalty check. That's all I got today, Jimmy. Till next time, tramps like us, babe.
Jeff in Southfield. Got me again, Jeff. I thought it was Trapper.
Good night,